All right, so today we are talking with Paul Marco, co-founder of Talus Security, and we're going to be doing something a little bit interesting today. We're going to be talking not about attacking things, but about defending things and how to prepare for that. One of the things that we do at Maltech is we emulate the threat actors, and we try to go in and find the vulnerabilities, exploit them, and see what impact those have. But on the inverse side, what do businesses do to prepare for this, right? How do they get ready for an incident? How do they respond to this, and how can they improve that stuff? So that's not my area of expertise, and so I wanted to bring in somebody that knew a little bit more what they're talking about. So I really appreciate you for joining me today, Paul. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Talus?
You made such a huge mistake by bringing me on here, because I am going to vent how much I hate fucking pen testers that come in and prove just how shitty things can be. Like, I can't tell you the millions of dollars and like the hours spent building control, and then some pen tester drops and is like, oh, 0 day. Sorry. Good luck, guys. That's 6 months worth of work. No, kidding aside, thank you so much for having me on. And I gotta say, like, this setup is pretty awesome.
It's not bad, right?
There are some points in your career where you're like, oh, this is kind of cool. I kind of feel like I made it, right? Oh, this is awesome. I like this one. This is the first time I've been brought into a studio to do this kind of thing. So thank you so much for having me, man. This is a trip.
Hey, I appreciate you coming. And, you know, it's the growth mode media here. These guys, they do an awesome job setting everything up. It makes it really easy for me, right? I just have to come in, bring in folks like yourself, just chat a little bit, and they take care of the rest. So.
What kind of discount are they giving you for that little drop?
Oh, I don't know. We'll talk about it after.
We'll negotiate later. Nice. No, this is very, very cool. And look, again, thank you. So, yeah, so Paul Marco, right? Talus Security. You hit the nail on the head. My entire career, I've been doing this 21 years now, and my entire career has been in security operations, right? Everything that ties into security operations, started in identity and access management, moved into running, being part of a security operations center, right? So detection, response, cyber threat intelligence, vulnerability management, and kind of everything in between. I've run some internal pen test spaces, but not to do the work, to like get the smart people the resources they needed, right? Make sure that those folks were properly situated. But outside of that, really, it's always kind of fallen back into like, that defensive mode, being sure. That blue team defender, the person that takes all of the things that we've implemented throughout your network, right, whatever it is, and then figured out how to use those things to provide the defenses, to provide the tripwires, to know like when an alert fires and like to make sense of the data.
Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of what I've done my entire career. And then just recently pivoted over to starting our own thing. And that's, you know, myself and my co-founder, Owen, we started Talus Security 4 years ago. To start in a very specific problem to solve, and then it has grown into more of a full cybersecurity services management platform, right? Something where we help our customers make sense of cybersecurity end to end, including partnering with organizations like yourself, right? To take those pen test reports that I've always like been worried about and make sense of them, right? And figure out how do you deploy resources based on what that report says to minimize the most risk.
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I feel like the areas where we operate are really complementary, which is where when we first started chatting, I think that's what really clicked nicely between us is just understanding where you're coming from and then seeing where we're coming, like where we come from on that side of things, and just how we can not only like work together, but just improve things and learn from each other too. Because I'm always of the mindset that by working, we would try to do things collaboratively, right? So by understanding how you try and implement things, how you try and help your organizations, we can bring in our little bit of expertise and our viewpoint and see if like all that stuff matches up or if there's any things that have been missed. And I think that's super important for not only the defensive folks to learn from the offensive, but, you know, likewise, the inverse is also really true.
You're 100% right. Like, you're spot on. And like, for all your listeners out there, for all of you listeners out there, cybersecurity is an ecosystem, right? And it's the only right way to think about it. If you're not thinking about each of these services, whether it's penetration testing, tabletops, detection, you know, endpoint detect, like whatever it is, tools, services, like all of the things that make up the controls that we have, if you're not thinking about those as an ecosystem, as inputs and outputs to the larger risk reduction, you're doing it wrong.
Sure.
Right? It's not one thing, right? It's when I talk to folks and I'm like, all right, tell me about your cyber program. They're like, oh, we have EDR. I'm like, oh, all right. We have some discussion. We got to talk through some stuff, right? Like, let's chill out here. So, yeah, man, that's exactly the right way to think about it. And, you know, as we kind of grow into like our own, right, as professionals, that's the only way to think about it. Mm-hmm. You start, you can't, like, you get to a point where you're like, I can't think about it any other way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what I've learned too by working, especially with newer companies, smaller organizations, is they don't always take that into account until they need it. So one of the things that I put together was this little bit of a like an introduction to cybersecurity course for businesses, right? Yeah, so it's just like, what are the things that you should care about and what are the things that are important as you're getting started? And you know, the things that came to mind for me, and I want to get your thoughts on this, things like just getting things documented, like your information security policy, your risk assessment, figuring out your insurance and those types of things, and your incident response plan. Just having it documented is like a good first step, I think. But like, what is your take on what businesses should look for in that preparation or just getting started phase?
Yeah, you're 100%. Like, and I think the tide is starting to change, right? The more connected we become, the more people lean into technology, the more they realize that that's your largest attack surface. That's where your risk exists. So like, long are the days where people are like, cyber, like, that's a nice to have. It's really not. It's becoming more mainstream, but especially for the 99% of businesses, right? The folks that aren't on the Fortune 500, like, sometimes that's a tough budgetary decision. And that's actually why one of the reasons at Talos, like, we take the approach we take is we almost always prioritize things that you can do for free first, mm-hmm. right? And documentation is one of those things. But the thing that's also tough is, like, I can sit here and talk about all those documents and all those controls, right? We've broken them down into 7 very specific things. I'll talk about those in a second. But the thing is, like, if you don't understand why those things are important, or even in some cases what they are, how can you expect someone who's trying to, like, you know, run a machine shop or sell cars or you know, run a laundry service? Like, there's tons of ways to make business, but they all have their own kind of, like, cyber risk, you know, exposures. How are you going to expect those people to do that if they don't understand, like, what it is?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's one of the biggest things that I got out of, like, building that course for the business owners is defining, like, who's responsible for what and just how to convey that information in the right way to different roles, right? Because you have somebody at the top of the chain that's kind of responsible for overseeing all of these things and the development of these processes or documents or whatever. But then you have the rest of the folks that are there to perform a job to try and get those things done, but they also have to know what to keep in mind from a security perspective, whether that's machine shops, whether it's you know, car dealerships or anything. You want to be able to tell your employees, like, yes, do all those things, that's all very important, right? But also make sure that you're keeping in mind that there's these other risks that are present, and to always be kind of cognizant of those and able to understand how to handle that.
I can share with you and your listeners kind of how we approach it, right, at Talos. And the reason why we built this framework, and this is just us, is because cybersecurity is crazy complicated, right? And we have a tendency to be very kind of focused, right, very deep on one topic, whether it's, you know, endpoint controls or whether it's, you know, network assessments or whatever it is. But at its core, cybersecurity is about control. It's really what it is. That is the entire hacker culture. It's like, there's a control. Can we break that control, yep, right? So, like, what we figured out is if we break cybersecurity into its core elements of control, it starts to make more sense. So this is what we figured out. What we figured out is at the very start of a control, you have to have a directive. What's driving that? Why are you doing it? Is it because you have some regulation that you have to follow? Is it because you have some internal strategy? Is it just an inherent risk you have to deal with? There's always a reason why you do something. And if you don't know the why, don't bother, right? Mm-hmm. You have to know the why. The next level down are policies. And policies are one of those things that everyone knows what they are. Everyone knows how to say the word.
Yep.
But not everyone understands why they're important, right? The key elements of policy are enforcement. Right? It gives you the teeth in your organization to say, hey, you're not allowed to plug in a USB drive, right? Here's what's going to happen if you do. Here's the steps we're going to take, right? And here are all the things, all the rules that say what you can and cannot do, which leads us into the next thing, the rules. Those are the standards, right? Have you taken time to determine what does and does not make sense for your organization? Will you have a firewall? Yes or no? Will you allow certain people to be a domain admin? Yes or no? These are all the standards that write the rules for your organization and how it operates. Then we get into the basic ones, right? Technology. Cyber was born of tech. We all know technology. There's an infinite number of technologies you can buy. Firewalls, IDS, proxy, EDR, MFA, all the other acronyms that come with our space. But then behind that, and one of the things that I've really loved to focus on, especially with, you know, people building a cyber program, is process. Mm. You have the tech. Do you know how to use it? Do you know what the steps are in order to turn on the capabilities you've spent. I can't tell you how many times you go into a client site or you even talk with someone passively, right? And you're like, they're like, oh, I have, I don't know, CrowdStrike. All right, cool. Do you know CrowdStrike comes with like 10 gigabytes of free SIM tool? It does? Yeah. And it has 900 pre-canned alerts you can turn on based on the source feed. Like, those are the things that people already bought and they just have to turn them on.
Sure.
But you have to understand the process how to do that. Then, of course, people. Who's going to run the stuff? Who's going to respond, right? Who's going to take the steps, right? All of those things. And then finally, and this one is more proprietary to us, is services. How do you take all of those things and wrap them into an offering for your organization? Mm. Explain to someone how you protect your network. Explain to someone how you provide governance. And by breaking those things down, what I've seen, especially over the last 4 years dealing with my clients, is you kind of get this like moment of relief. You're like, oh, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Now I understand how to think about cybersecurity. So, you know, from a small, medium-sized business perspective, bringing clarity to cyber, whether it's through a very well-crafted penetration test that outlines exactly what was exploited and what an attacker is going to do, down to the standards you're going to modify to support that penetration test, those connections, that ecosystem makes more sense now.
No, I love hearing that approach to it too. I think it makes a ton of sense. And even I'm learning a little bit more about this so that I can bring those ideals back to my customers when I'm sure. doing a penetration test and seeing like some of where those gaps exist. And some of the stuff that comes to mind right away is you talk about how they've, you know, create or maybe purchase these solutions sure. or deploy them and have something out there. One of the things that we always talk about, and we've mentioned it in the past, is challenging those assumptions too. Like, hey, you have CrowdStrike, it's been deployed. Is it working the way that you expect right. it is, right? Is it catching things? Is it not? Are there blind spots there? And how do you actually test all of that stuff? And I feel like that's where we come in and challenge those policies, procedures, all of those things, and then find where those gaps exist.
That's why I hate
like,
you hey. Guys. Yeah. Yeah. I know. Yes.
It's like, hey, the password policy is supposed to be this, but we have people that are not following that at all. And that now we've been able to see that. And now we can take the appropriate actions to address that gap that we've identified there.
Oh, yeah. Not to pick on it, but you're a market leader, CrowdStrike. Like, chill, you're fine. So, like, CrowdStrike, if you don't have the right operating system, it goes into monitor mode. The protections stop, right? And I don't even mean right, like, well, is it like a Windows or Linux? It'll cover everything. But if you're out of support, like, the agent turns off. Mm. People don't know that, right? Or to your point, let's say you have 100 workstations on a network. If 99 have CrowdStrike, cool. What about the one?
Yeah.
What is it doing, right? What does it have access to? So, like, to your point, it's finding those paths, because I feel like there's this false sense of safety that people get when they invest in these tools, right? If we just stick on the EDR, EDR usually has levels of protection, right? Mm-hmm. And the lowest level of protection is basically just logging, right? It won't block much,
yep.
right? Then you have another level, then you have, like, advanced protection. That's the stuff where it'll, like, catch behavior and all these things. But people buy these products and they're like, oh yeah, I have cyber. Right? I have my blanket on, right? I have CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike's the best, or whatever. I'll fill in the blank. It doesn't have to be them. It could be Defender. It could be SentinelOne. It could be whatever else, right? And that's the thing where it's like, all right, but if you don't bring someone in to do assurance testing, if you don't bring someone in to make sure that your configurations have been optimized, it's a false sense of security, mm-hmm. right? And that's mm-hmm. the thing that worries me.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes a ton of sense. And there's one thing that you and I had talked about before that I really want to get into. One of the types of approaches that businesses implement in order to take the next step, right? Mm-hmm. You talk about defining all the policies, sure. all the rules, all those things. And I want to get into a little bit more on the tabletop side of things, because you mentioned yes. that really quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that I had heard when I really started my career as more of a military exercise, right? They would sure. do the tabletops, you know, the red team, the blue team, which is where, you know, terms generally came from. Blue team, the good guys, red team, the attackers, the bad guys. But now that's really filtered down from these large corporations doing these things or the government, and now it's filtering down to, like, small businesses that are implementing sure. tabletop type exercises. But I wanted you to start with just explaining a little bit about what that is, and then we can, you know, chat a little bit more about, like, how to do those and you know, the benefits of those.
We can be friends again.
Yeah.
I know we started in a tumultuous spot, but you brought in one of my passions. No, tabletops are awesome. They're an incredible tool. And they're actually one of the things where you can actually download stuff from, like, CISA's website for free, right? So, like, again, getting back to this limited resource thing is, like, these are things you can still do and still take the motions and start to gain some of the benefit. So, yeah, so to explain the tabletop, let's start with, you're right, it's, in cybersecurity, it's a big deal. In some cases, it's regulatory. It's a regulatory mandate. And at its core, what it is you're testing your incident response plan. At its core, right? Now, it takes plenty of different flavors. We'll talk about those in a second.
And you're like virtually testing these. You're not actually correct. Having some sort of event or whatever.
Very different than, say, a cyber range, right? Mm-hmm. A cyber range, you're going to go in and you're going to use tech and you're going to do these types of things, and that's great. But a tabletop is actually, it's based on the name, right? It's sitting around a table, right? Everyone has their paper, their incident response plan, and like you introduce a scenario, and then based off of that scenario, you work through what you would do, mm-hmm. right? And that's the spirit of a tabletop. And like, we use them in cybersecurity a ton, but that doesn't mean that that's the only place that happens. It's really any type of emergency response. Like if you have an emergency, or if you offer a service that deals with emergencies in some capacity, it could be a water main break, it could be a gas leak, it could be a terrorist attack. It doesn't matter, right? We talked about, you know, military. Is that there are a series of steps that have to occur to remediate the issue, and there are people that are responsible to take those steps. What you don't want to do is you don't want to be figuring it out in the day.
Sure.
Right? And that's why I try to tell folks when we do tabletops with folks, a tabletop, as much as it's this element of, all right, you have in some cases you have an obligation to test. In other cases, it's just a great idea to do it anyway, testing your incident response plan. That's a very small part of it. The best parts about it are, is your process going to work when you need to? And more importantly, can you build the muscle memory you need so that when something actually happens, when shit hits the fan, you're not scrambling? Mm-hmm. And I try to tell folks, like, your incident response plan is important, but the importance of the incident response plan is writing and validating it, right? Because the plant seeds in your brain, right? You have a place to go to reference. If you're in the middle of a cyber incident, if you've declared an incident, there's an active attack on your network, and you're going line by line in your incident response plan, you have a problem, mm-hmm. right? Your team at that point should know what they're doing. They should know what levers to pull and when to pull them. And your tabletop is the opportunity to test that, to make sure it works. That's what I try to tell folks to focus on. Yes. Are you going to get some checkbox that says, I did it once a year? Great. If that's the only reason you're doing it, don't waste your time.
Sure.
Right? Sit around the table for 15 minutes, be like, okay, read the incident response plan. We got it. Okay, checkbox. If that's what you want, just do that. That's a terrible use of your time. The right way to do this is to really get into the weeds, into the details, to figure out what would work and what wouldn't work, and being honest with yourself and your organization. That's the only way to get better.
Yeah, you have to identify those gaps or those flaws, and you have to really understand how different people within the organization are affected. Like when I started learning about tabletops, my assumption was that, oh, it's, you know, largely an exercise for the IT folks or the people that are in charge of maybe the server that went down or whatever. But as I learned more about it over the years, I realized, like, oh no, there's so much more that's involved. Like in some cases you have to get legal involved, because how do they handle this situation? Like, are there legal implications to what has occurred? Are there PR implications? Do you need to get marketing involved to make a statement or to craft something to go out there in case there's some sort of reputational concerns are hit?
Yeah.
And like you said, in the moment, you're not going to be thinking about that. You're going to be like, oh, I want to get the server back online.
Right.
But then, oh, there's other things that we have to abide by, or maybe that we want to abide by, and we need to make sure we have that stuff identified ahead of time.
I'm glad you brought that up. I almost feel like I went too far too fast, right? Like, to pull this back, you're 100% right. Like, doing a tabletop well, right? Of course it includes the IT team and like it's centered on technology and cybersecurity. That makes a ton of sense. But we also have to understand that this is about crisis management, right? Mm-hmm. So like, in order to really understand like how to do a tabletop well, you have to understand the life cycle of an incident, a cybersecurity incident. And the incidents always start technically. They also never start in the beginning of an incident. It's always in the middle of an incident or at the end of an incident, right? So there's this element of technical recovery, and that's the thing that makes all the headlines. Oh, this much data was breached. These many services have been down. This company hasn't been on for months or whatever it is, right? Like depending on the actual incident itself. The thing is, like, you have to think about it as almost two lines on a line chart, right? And the first line starts kind of in the back. It kind of gradually builds, and then really quickly it falls off, right? That line, that's your technology work stream. That's your incident responders. Those are your folks that are restoring servers, right? But right about halfway through that first line, a new line emerges. And that line comes up very quickly and then tapers off over a long course of time. So it kind of builds this hill, right? But one starts slow and drops fast, the other builds fast and falls slow. That second line is crisis management. that second line are is your internal legal team looking at, like, what are your regulatory obligations? Do I have to notify my vendors? Do I have to notify my customers? How much time do I have to do it? What's the verbiage that we're going to use? What's the medium? Are we going to email it? Are we going to put it in print? Are we going to create a specially crafted video? Like, and that's just the legal work stream. Sure. What about in cybersecurity insurance? If you don't know that insurance policy, if you haven't worked through the details, you could potentially void the policy by taking certain steps on your network without authorization. And then your entire policy is voided. And insurance is very good in getting out of paying things.
Oh, I'm
trust
sorry.
Me, right? So those are just two of the details that draw the value from a cybersecurity tabletop, right? At what point do you engage insurance? What's the requirement? At what point do you engage an external PR firm, right? If you're going through something as severe as a ransomware event, do you know to engage a negotiator, right? More importantly, before you pay, do you know that if you pay a ransomware and that actual hacker group is hosted in one of the embargoed nations, you're actually going to have federal implications that come back behind that because you've made a payment to an embargoed nation. These are the details that people don't think about until you get into it, and this is the value of a cybersecurity tabletop, working those through those things in a safe space and identifying what you do and do not have figured out.
That's just, you're giving me so much here to think about too, as I'm learning more. As somebody that's, you know, done honestly probably countless of these, I just love hearing the just stuff that I haven't thought of before and that I can, you know, help my customers with. The other thing that comes to mind there too is that in these situations, it's almost like folks would do it in like this optimal scenario. Like everybody that's involved is there, but then, hey, shit hits the fan and, you know, the IT manager is out on vacation. Now what do we do? Like, people just assume that we have all this process, but then there's all these other variables that come into play that you can now play out on the tabletop exercise and say, like, okay, well, our legal team's out, or they're, you know, our main, you know, counsel is on vacation. What do we do in that point? You know, like, just figuring out all those different gotchas and how to respond to those is also hugely important, because it's never going to be an optimal situation when you're dealing with a crisis.
Listener, I have to speak directly to you right now, because I promise we did not practice this. We didn't have talking points. We were just like, yeah, let's go and let's talk about tabletops. Mike is setting me up for, like, one of my biggest passions. So let me.
That's my job.
Right? You know what? This is what happens when you get two like-minded individuals together, right? Sorry. So let me share a bit of a story that kind of ties into this, because it's spot on, like, and we'll get into it. So Talos Security started as a tabletop company. That was our first offering. That was the first problem we wanted to solve. And it actually came out of an experience that me and my co-founder had while we were working for one of these huge Fortune 500 financial firms, right? Like, that's what our career was. We spent most of our time in these, like, huge companies with $300-400 million cyber budgets. Cyber budgets. Like, that was, right? That's just cyber. So we had all the best resources. Everything was is incredible, right? Which is also why I get so annoyed when people like you come and find holes. So in this one particular tabletop, a very well-known, very reputable cybersecurity company came in. We paid them like $150,000 to facilitate this tabletop. So I'm running ops at the time, and I remember sitting in this huge conference room, right? Big kind of, like, you know, horseshoe table, screens in front, like, you know, picture a beautiful IT conference room, right? Like in that you see in the movies. We're in this room, right? So we're sitting there, we're in this room, we're going through. And then the person who's facilitating the tabletop, she meant well. She goes, okay, an alert fires. Paul, you run security operations. What do you do? I look at her. I'm like, well, I need more information. What do you mean, what do I do? Just, you know, what do you do? Tell me about, like, what would you do? Talk through it. I'm like, all right, well, what's the alert? Like, you know, what information do I have? What's the don't worry about all that. Just talk through it. And I got so angry. I was like, okay, fine. The alert would fire within 3 minutes, which is our SLA. The security operations center would pick it up. They would start the triage. They'd immediately understand that it needs to be escalated. They would escalate to tier two, who would then gather all the evidence, and they determine that an incident would need to be declared, but that can only be done by the incident response team. They would then escalate to the incident response team, who would then review all the evidence, make a declaration, and then start to do the response procedures, which would include containment, blocking, and then they would go back to recovery. If there were any issues, they would connect with the IT team. They would do full backup and restoration, and we'd close the issue. Now, for those of you listening, that's total bullshit. That's not how that goes. But everyone in the room was like, really great, man. That was, and I was like, that was horseshit. I made that up. That's not real life. That's not how these things go.
Sure.
And what I realized is tabletops had fallen into these two categories. They had fallen into that category where everything goes swimmingly. Everything that you've designed works exactly the way it's supposed to work. But then there's the other side, and it goes like this. All right, Paul, an alert fires. What would you do? Well, the security operations team would pick it up within 3 minutes. Actually, the whole security operations team is not available. What would happen? Oh, I guess after 15 minutes, it would all escalate to the Tier 2 team. Tier 2 team is having connection issues. They can't get on the system, so what'd you do? After 30 more minutes, it would escalate to me, and I would start to do the triage, and I would identify that there needs to be containment. Ah, sorry, EDR is not on that box. What would you do? I guess I'd call the network team and have them pull the cable. Well, the data center is on fire. Okay. I call 911 and call the fire department, and I call the CISO. Ah, CISO's in jail. This is not a winnable scenario, right? And I get the intent of those as well. It's to stress test you, right? Yeah. Think outside the box. Like, if things aren't going to go well, what are you going to do when every single control fails? But that's also not reality, mm-hmm. right? So what I like to do, and what I've developed with my co-founder, this was our very first product, and this is what, honestly, like, your listeners can do on their own, right? You know your network better than anyone, right? So, like, as a listener, like, you can do this stuff, right? Is we would figure out what all the controls are. Right, we go into an organization and be like, all right, give us all your tech controls. Give us an idea of coverage. Like, we always do a good example, and this is how I'll drive this home, is we always do a culture and awareness survey when we do an engagement. And we reach out to everyone in the org. We send them a survey. Hey, tell me how you report cybersecurity concerns. How often do you see phishing? Tell me how you install software. Tell me if your computer locks after a certain amount of time. And you get some great info from the org if you ask the right questions, sure. right? So let's play this out. So what we would do is we would take that data and we would try to mimic real life as far as an attack goes as best as we could. So in that question for phishing, right? Do you know how to report phishing? Let's say I sent it to 100 people. And let's say 70% of the people or 70 people came back and they were like, yeah, I pushed the phishing button. That's great. Because then it sends that data to the ops team or to whoever, the IT manager. They get the email, they get the header, they get the IP addresses, they can get information from it, and they have an understanding of, all right, well, if a lot of people are sending this, it's a campaign. If it's a few people, maybe it's opportunistic, but I can block IPs. I know that it's being spoofed. I have a link. I know what they're after. You get a ton of info when people follow the control. But 30 people were like, oh, no, I text Greg. Okay. You know, or whatever, or 10 people, or I got text right, 20 people are like, no, I just delete it. Mm-hmm. I just know it's bad, right? Well, now I have 30% of the people that have a gap. So now when I do the cybersecurity tabletop scenario, I don't say an alert has fired, what do you do? I say a phishing alert has fired. Roll this 10-sided die. If you roll a 1 to a 7, you get the info. You'll get the link. You'll get who it went to. If you roll an 8, 9, or 10, yeah, you're going to have to go about your day. We're going to skip this whole section because your people didn't do what they were supposed to do and you don't have the information. That mimics real life.
And it's unique to the organization itself.
Completely right? Custom,
so
right.
It's in line with what their likely scenario would, how it would play out, or ideally how it might play out relative to what they have in place.
Exactly. And that's the whole intention, right? And then you get to a point where that's just the tech piece, but there's also pieces like, all right, you know, how many people here have reviewed the cybersecurity policy? Oh, 2 out of 10? Roll the dice. If you roll a 3 or higher, like, you're going to avoid the policy, and that's not going to be an option, right? Like, that's extreme, but, like, the idea is you want to try to replicate an incident in real life. And there are plenty of times where I've went to contain a workstation, and it worked great. Push the button, workstation came offline. And then there are times I go to contain a workstation, it's like, oh, agent's not on there. Oh, we didn't have coverage. All right, well, what am I going to do now?
Right.
And adding that reality to a tabletop builds the muscle memory, right? The options that are available in order to be able to do. So let me give you a great example. Just did a tabletop with a client. Awesome tabletop. Went really, really well. And they actually picked a super difficult scenario. So, like, kudos to them, right? They pushed themselves, which was great. But in this case, one of the things that we worked through is, like, they had gotten to a point where they're like, we got to pull the internet. We got to pull the whole internet. We're going to shut it down. We're going to completely shut this thing down. But then as they were talking through it, one of the leadership members was like, well, hold on. I got to send out notifications to these people. And it was a group of people they had to notify. I was like, if you cut the internet, like, how do I do that? And they're like, ah, you know what? You're right. Shoot, if we cut the internet, you won't be able to do it because you can't do it from off our network. You'd have to be on our network because of geofencing and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, all right, well, you know what? We'll keep the internet up, but we'll lock the whole firewall except for that one service and that one port. Now, that idea, to think about that now, that turns into a process and a playbook so that when shit hits the fan, that's the play, as opposed to thinking about it in the middle of an incident when adrenaline is high, people are freaking out, people are calling. Like, this is the benefit. You get to a level of reality to work out how your org is specifically going to be impacted.
Wow. Yeah. What really drives that home to me with the die part of it is it really brings like focus onto how large that gap could be.
For sure.
Right? Because it's like, oh, well, you know, we've done these security awareness campaigns and we have some statistics on how well it would be.
For sure.
So it's like, oh, well, we know that that's been really bad. And if that comes up, we're going to have some trouble. So when you have to, when it comes to, you know, rolling the dice on it, literally in this case, it really makes you think, oh, we should probably take some actions against
A psychological element to making people roll the dice, exactly, right? Like you want to drive that home.
I already know how these odds are going to play out for me.
So I'll tell you another story, and this one annoyed me. Oh, my God. But it is what it is, right? Same thing, same process. Like when we do this, we have a process where we like collect all the data, we send out surveys, we synthesize it, we turn what we can into statistics. And this one customer didn't have a SIM tool, right? So for those of you just listening, new in your career, a SIM tool is a log aggregator. It's where you send all of your security data into one spot, and it makes investigations much, much easier. Instead of having to run to every tool and correlate, you pull it into one spot, and you can write queries to say, all right, show me everything this user did. Show me everything that this email went to. Like, and makes it much, much simpler. They didn't have one. I was harping on them. Like, you got to get one. You got to get one. Like, I've been through incidents where if I didn't have a SIM tool, like networks would be hard down, right? Mm-hmm. Like saved our ass, right? So like, I'm like, all right, it's tabletop time. I purposely wrote an inject where it's like, you have this information, right? But you don't have a SIM tool. So the only way to catch that this happens is you just happen to be looking at this particular platform at this particular time. So I'm going to give you a 10% chance. Here's the dice. If you roll a 1 to a 9, you don't get the alert. If you roll a 10, so like, and we always like make people volunteer to roll. So they go to pick it up. And of course, like you can see everyone. If this fucking guy didn't roll a 10, I was so mad. I was like, are you serious? Like, I can't, but the thing is, that's real life, right? Real life would have been like, he just happened to be in this console this time. He's like, that's weird. Like, that happens, right? So I had to follow, I had to eat my own, you know, my own dog food. I had to follow my own rules, and that's how it went. He got the info, they got the telemetry, it moved the thing along, and they got lucky.
But even still, it highlights that huge gap. Like, everybody around is going to be like,
the thing is, like, you don't want to get lucky.
Yeah.
That's not the right way to run a cyber program, right? And be like, got lucky on that one. Like, next time you're not going to get lucky. In fact, there's a 90% likelihood you won't get lucky next time.
Sure. Right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So let's talk a little bit more about like how you've implemented some of those for customers. So can you give us like an example, maybe just like a really, I guess maybe a simpler example of like what a company might expect from one of these sorts of things. Like you mentioned a little bit about like, hey, an alert fires or whatever, but like, how do you craft that with like an organization? Is it specific to their industry? Is it like just a general sort of scenario? Like, where does that go?
We can talk generically about the structure of a tabletop. They're typically the same, right? I mean, obviously I do things a little differently because of my own personal aggravations in the past, right? But in this particular case, like the structure of a tabletop is pretty formulaic, right? And what they're called is they're called injects, right? Mm-hmm. So a typical tabletop will have anywhere between 3 to 5 injects. Typically, some companies break them up into more, some make less, right? But generally, you're going to get 3 to 5. And all an inject is you're telling a story, right? So for those of you who want to do this at home, like here's how you do it, right? If you don't want to pay folks like me and you want to just do it on your own, totally fine, 100% worth it. What I like to do when I build a cybersecurity tabletop is I start with a full narrative, the whole story. So the thing that I like to do is I will pick an attack, right? But the way that we do it is we have certain variables that we have the customer choose, and then those variables drive that narrative, right? So we'll start with the attacker's perspective. Like, all right, I'm targeting this company for this reason. My goal is extortion because I want X amount of dollars. And I research their budget online. I see that they closed a big deal. And if I can get 1% of that deal, right? And then you write the narrative of like, all right, now I'm going to research their infrastructure. And this is my way in. And this is the vector I'm going to use. And this is what I'm going to weaponize. But you have to write that narrative knowing that you're going to start in the middle of the story because no one gets that insight, right? No one ever gets you to a point where you're like, all right, I know that I'm going to be you know, that an attacker is targeting me and they're going to look at this thing and I got this data. Like, you can piece some of that together through, like, you know, scanning and all this other stuff, right? But, like, from this perspective, you start in the middle of the story, right? And then from that perspective, you just start to create injects. And that's where things like an alert will fire. The structure of the inject is usually typical as well. It starts with some information, right? And then a guided discussion. You have this information, what do you do? Who do you talk to? What part of your process are you following? Then you get to another part of the discussion. You're like, all right, what do you do here? Like, what process do you follow, right? And then you kind of further that until you get to a debrief, right? At the end of an inject, before you introduce new information, always take a second while things are fresh in your team's mind. Be like, all right, what worked well? What didn't work well? What did you do? What didn't you do? What could you have done differently? Like, one of the questions I ask after every inject, and I do this purposely, is it time to declare an incident? Right? Early in the scenario, it may not be. You may not have enough information. It might just be a phishing email. Don't declare an incident there, right? At the end of the scenario, you might be full into, like, extortion. And you better have declared an incident multiple injects before, but I'm always going to ask, like, did you declare an incident? And it's because that's a critical part of your incident response plan, is knowing what that point is to say, yep, at this point, I'm going to declare an incident, and here's why.
Mm. Now, for the follow-up from, like, a tabletop side, so as we mentioned before, those are just, like, we're walking through a scenario hypothetically,
sure,
that makes sense with the specific customer, say. To me, the next logical piece, or another really important piece, is the practical testing of some of those things, right? You're like, oh, we're going to restore from the backup, or we're going to do X, Y, and Z. Is that part of, not the tabletop process, but part of, like, the stuff that you do with organizations as well? Like, try these, like, hey, we're gonna restore this backup and test that process works correctly.
It's really up to the customer. Like, so there are tabletops where it's truly just tabletops sit around a desk, like, let's talk through things and, like, let's suss out the actions or what we have to do after. And there are customers that have been like, hey, I wanna couple my annual BCDR test with this, right? In which cases, like, for example, I don't know, one example would be, this server came down as part of the attack, or it's been fully encrypted. Can you restore it?
Mm-hmm.
And if they'd be like, yeah, I'd be like, okay, good, go restore it. go start the process, right? Let me know how it goes, right? And then you kind of bring that in. So, but it's really up to the team, right?
Sure.
It has to do with, like, capacity. I actually like when we schedule a tabletop and someone can't show up, because that's real life, right?
Yeah.
It's like, but this engineer is not going to be able to come. And we're always just like, good. Who's going to do it, right?
Yeah.
What if that person got hit by a bus?
Yep, for sure. Now you got to have a story here, or at least a few of those stories, on, say, an organization that you helped with a tabletop, and then something happened at some point in the future, right? Like,
yeah,
these incidents are happening. It's not just like we're playing these things out and then hopefully they never occur. Obviously, that's the goal, but in some cases, things occur. So, do you have any, like, feedback on organizations that have implemented those and how they've been able to address it?
Oh, yeah. In every case. Case, something has happened, right? Because it's not if, it's when in cyber, right? Now, what's different is kind of the blast radius,
sure,
how bad it is, right? Sometimes it's just, you know, it's a simple little thing. Something popped, you know, the control worked. You were able to get in and figure out what control failed so that it initially happened. Great. And then sometimes there are bigger issues. I guess the biggest one is I did have this one tabletop where we had done this tabletop, right? I don't want to give out any info, so I'm going to generify as much as I can, right?
Please.
We did a tabletop at some point in the year, right? And at that point, like, they had run through a scenario, they had selected a ransomware event because that's very prevalent, right? Crypto has enabled that globally, right? This is why this is such a problem. And we ran through that event, and it was a harrowing event. There was a bunch of things that didn't work, that they hadn't worked out from a procedural perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't 30 days later, and they had a ransom note dropped on a desktop.
Really?
Yeah. So it was it might have been 3 weeks later. And 3 weeks later, they had a full-blown cyber attack. But the thing that worked well is that because the tabletop was so fresh in their minds, they knew, like, all right, we got to do this. I remember this from the tabletop. All right, let's put in conditional access. All right, boom, let's turn on VP, like, whatever, right? And, like, based on those actions, they were able to recover their network significantly faster than had we been trying to figure these things out on the fly,
mm-hmm,
right? At one point, one of the executives had ended up meeting with a .gov to keep it generic, and they were surprised at how quickly that organization was able to get them out, right? Because like they were like, wow, that's impressive. That threat actor, we know that threat actor. They're really good. They're very good at building persistence. The fact that you got them out in hours as opposed to days or weeks, which is typical for this threat actor, that's telling. And I attribute some of that, not all, right? As much as I would love to pat myself on the back, I attribute some of that to that muscle memory.
Sure. Right?
When something happens, know what levers to pull and when to pull them.
No, but still, it just goes to reinforce the fact that having simulated an exercise like that just is so much more helpful than just having it documented, right? Just thinking through it as a team with the organization, and then just determining how are we going to do this and where are our weak spots. Like, I think that it's really underestimated that the value that could bring when those types of incidents occur.
Let me share a personal story with you that drives that home, because so many people like know they have to do this documentation. They know they have to have an incident response plan. They know they have to have processes in place. But those are literally paperweights. Like they're things on a shelf. If you don't keep them up to date, if you don't use them, if they're not actively reviewed and tested, it doesn't matter. So two stories. One, I was doing one for a company, and as part of our normal kind of process, we're like, all right, send me your incident response plan. And they did. And this thing hadn't been updated in like 8 years. Like half the people on this thing weren't there anymore, right? And I was just like, oh, I'm gonna have a field day with these folks, right? Like this is like, but the thing is like, it was the incident response plan was produced by a very, very well-known, high-up Fortune 500 IT company. And it's like, they probably paid $85,000 to $100,000 for that thing, right? And like, you know, here we are, years later, no one took care of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like maintenance on a house, right? You could let the roof continue to leak and, you know, put a bucket under it, but there's a lot of larger problems that are going to come from that. I'll share another story. I was going through an incident. This is prior to me moving into my own company, working for an organization. And I ran the security operations and incident response and cyber threat intelligence teams. That was my domain. That's what I did. And we had a scenario where I had to call into a vendor and engage one of their tools, one of their processes. So it's like, oh, it's like 11:30, 11:45 at night, right? It's a Friday night. It's always a Friday night, right? It always happens. And we get this call and we're like, all right, we jump on, we're doing the thing. We're like, all right, we know what to do. We're going to call this company. We're going to turn this thing on. We're going to do that thing, right? However we have to do it. I'm being vague on purpose. But I call a company and they're like, yep, okay, hang on. Let me just get you to the right folks. They connect me. They're like, all right, yep, what do you need to do? Yeah, I need to do this. Like, no problem. Yep, you have that service. Great, we're going to go ahead and do that. What's your name? That's Paul. Paul what? Paul Marco. I'm sorry, sir, you're not authorized to engage with us. I'm like, what do you mean I'm not authorized? I run this space. I sign your invoice. I'm definitely authorized. They're like, no, you got to call, I forget who it was, Joe Brown. I'm like, Joe Brown left 3 years ago. We're not calling Joe. Like, who do I need to escalate to right now? We have an active thing. Like, I need to talk to someone. And like, we got the reps on the phone. Like, oh no, yeah, you're good. Okay, get your CISO to send a letter. This is all midnight, right? But like, these are the things. It's like, if you don't test these things, how do you know they're going to work?
Yeah.
And that's the benefit of a tabletop.
Wow. Oh gosh, I can only imagine the stress in that situation of just having to fight over that. Who can actually call in for the incident?
I haven't had hair for a long, long time, and I think everyone can kind of sort out why.
Well, let me ask you this, a little bit related, but we're getting off the topic of that side of things a little bit. So I do a lot of work with students, and one of the things that I find to really be important is to expose them to different areas of the industry. Obviously, I have my interest in the offensive side of things, the pen testing, the red teaming and stuff.
Sure.
But what do you feel like students should learn or know to, if they were interested in an area like where you operate,
for
doing those types of things or just being more effective? Like what have you found to be successful from a learning perspective over the course of your career here?
That's a tough question, because the industry has changed a ton.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, back in the day, I would have said, oh, take that tier one SOC job, right? Get in there, start looking at those alerts, start understanding, like, how that works. But the reality is, like, those jobs are getting converted into more automated functions, right? Mm-hmm. First with the implementation of SOAR, and now with SOAR plus large language models, like, those jobs are kind of, like, falling, they're fewer and far between. They're still be there. There's always going to be a human element to a security operations center. You have to just, these networks are too custom and too unique to not have that. But I think at the end of the day, like people that are looking to get into this stuff, I think the more generic and first answer is understand why. Like learn about the technology. How does a network work? What are the network fundamentals? What is Active Directory? How does that work, right? What is LDAP? How does that work? Because the thing is, like, these are the underlying components that attackers exploit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you jump right into cyber, if you skip network fundamentals, system fundamentals, right, endpoint configuration, cloud fundamentals, if you skip those and jump right into, well, I'm going to be in cyber, you're not going to have a full understanding of where the industry is going, like how to be able to ask the right questions, right? To understand like what are the elements that are being exploited? What are the things that are being weaponized? Or in some cases, what are the controls that are failing that have enabled an attacker to kind of take a foothold or an action or something to that effect? So I think the first piece is learn tech, right? Learn technology first. Understand like how a firewall works. Understand how port blocking works. I'm not sure what a port is, right? Like mm-hmm. just like those basic level things. And then start to understand cyber, right? And like that's always been the thing. Like when I talk to IT folks, it's like there's always a little resentment on the cyber team. And the reason why is because the cyber team has to understand all the stuff that the tech people understand. Then they have to understand cyber on top, right? So like in this case, don't lose that side of the coin. Understand how technology works. Understand what a network architecture is or why it's set up that way. Understand the difference between a network tier and a network zone. Understand the difference between how cloud should be set up versus how on-premise network should be set up. Like these are the things that fundamentally will shape a cyber person's career over a long period of time. The other piece of advice I'd give is, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be pen testing, could be detection, could be response, it could be vulnerability management, it could be app dev. Like, it doesn't matter, right? Start in one area and go deep, right? Become an expert, but understand all the inputs and outputs. Understand what's inputting to that service, understanding what's outputting from that service to support another service, and then broaden your skill set, right? Because then you can start to understand how that full ecosystem works. And that becomes powerful. That gives you a leg up as a cyber professional in my mind.
I think that's awesome advice. And I like your point about going deep in one of those areas, because often I'll have conversations with folks that want to get into, say, like penetration testing. And they say like, oh, I've only worked as like a SOC analyst or something.
Sure.
And what I always end up having a conversation with them about is talking specifically about their area of knowledge and what they bring to the table on the inverse side of it, right? So like a SOC analyst has like a really solid understanding of like what flags alerts, how those can be mismanaged or misconfigured, right, what things can be missed, how you can kind of hide alerts or bypass some of those things. And that's like stuff that me as somebody that rose through the ranks of like help desk and system admin and those types of things, like
right,
I never really got into the weeds with some of that stuff. So it's like a skill set that I didn't develop, but you know, when you reflect that back to them and you say like, hey, you have all this knowledge and you can think about how to bypass all that, it really helps them understand better like what they bring to the table on the inverse. And I feel like no matter where you're operating, whether it's defense, offense, finding the ways that the other side plays just right, helps a ton. Like from your perspective or the tabletop, you have to understand like what's happening in the industry, what types of attacks people are like facing, what types of threats that, you know, that are just like prevalent. Like you can't just get away with understanding how to protect things without knowing what you're protecting against. So I feel like the fundamentals is huge. And I think that's really not enforced enough for folks. Like you really have to do the work of understanding those foundational base components before you can build off of any of that, because there's just no way to understand better how these things operate without going into those weeds. So I think that's huge advice. And I think
100%. And that's something that will stick with you all the way through your career, right? For those of you that are ambitious enough, you want to get into management and hold a C-level like title. Like I remember one CISO I used to work for, brilliant, brilliant dude. Like he would make his directs. Now these are like people that have, you know, 15, 20 years experience. And he'd force them to rotate every year, right? Mm. If you're running risk this year, next year you're running ops. And if you're running ops this year, next year you're running governance. And if you're running governance this year, next year you're going to run engineering, right? And even though those people didn't have those skill sets, he forced them to understand that entire ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And that was a very powerful thing because it allowed that clarity of like, oh, no, I do know how your stuff works. And I also know how my changes are going to impact that stuff.
Sure.
Right? And that made for an unbelievably mature cyber program. So now extrapolate that at the individual level. Like if an individual understands like, oh, I'm growing up in ops, but you know what? I spent enough time shadowing the risk people that I understand now how they calculate risk. And I understand, you know, what the quantitative, you know, indicators are for risk and how it gets scored. I can actually help contribute to that and be like, well, actually, this is how often I see this. I see this, you know, 16 times a year, mm-hmm. right? Oh, well, that's going to fall into the moderate quantification or whatever. Like, the idea is to be able to translate your skill set to support the other elements of a cyber program. And look, it doesn't even have to be the enterprise level. There doesn't have to be a risk person and a governance person. It could be one person doing all those things. But to be able to dig into those things and be able to understand how they all intertwine, how they work together, as opposed to being very problems focused, mm-hmm. I feel like folks in our industry are very problems. They're just like, oh, I have an endpoint problem. All right, I'm gonna buy EDR. Done. All right, I have a regulatory problem, so I'm gonna build a risk register. Done. Right? Like that's fine. That'll get you so far, but you will get to a point where if you're not connecting those dots across the environment, across an organization, it's for naught. You're capping your ability to grow.
Well said. Well said. So as we're getting close to wrapping up here, what's coming up? What's on your schedule here? What you got going on?
I am going to Black Hat and DEF CON for the first time in my career.
Oh, boy.
I've been doing cybersecurity for 43,000 hours, and I have never been able to get to these conferences. I've always been in this scenario where, like, I work for one place, and they're like, all right, well, you're too junior, we only send senior folks. And then I switch jobs, and they're like, oh, sorry, you're too senior, we only send junior folks, right? So, like, I've heard all the stories coming back. I've heard about how crazy this stuff is. I've heard, don't bring your laptop, don't bring your Apple Watch. I've heard, like, you know, if you're going to use anything, get a Chromebook and, like, make it a burner, right? But, like, I've never actually gone. So I'm really looking forward to going to these conferences in the next couple of weeks. I don't know when this will come out, but in the next couple of weeks, I'll have gone to these conferences, and I'm really stoked about it.
Oh, yeah, it'll be interesting. Yeah. You are in for a treat, so prepare yourself.
All right.
There's just, I mean, you can't really be prepared for an area where there's like 20,000 plus people working in the same industry, just
right.
in every possible capacity. And it's just an experience. Some people don't love it just because it is very busy.
Sure.
But I found it to be just like, just so rewarding from the connections that you can make and the people that you can meet and everything. Yeah. I remember one time I had, I really wanted to get like a Gordon Ramsay steak, right? So I was just in Vegas and I was like, all right, I'm going to go in. They have a spot at the bar. So I was like, all right, I'll sit at the bar. And I'm just sitting there, you know, ordering my food and chatting with the guy next to me. And I'm like, oh yeah, you know, what's, you know, how are you doing?
What do you do?
He's like, oh, I'm the, like the head of global red team operations for like Chase or whatever. And it's just like, oh wow. Wow, a really important guy at a really large, or, you know, something of to that
for
level.
Sure.
And it's just like, just you wouldn't just randomly run into somebody like that otherwise.
Right.
So I will be out there too. I'm looking forward to connecting with you.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Hopefully you'll come. And I do, I brought you a small gift, and I don't know if you have anything like this, and I don't usually do this, but.
Oh man.
I wanted.
I thought I was getting a treat being in a studio, and now we're doing gifts. I didn't bring anything, just
I'll
to be clear.
I'll explain it in just a second.
All right.
Because it's like an extra. And it goes perfectly with what you do here, so maybe you can implement it in your daily tasks here.
All right. Oh man, I'm just like reeling as to what this could possibly be. Oh man, look.
So we have a giant. We got to make sure that when you're doing these rolls, that everybody can clearly see. I don't know if you use the regular size dice or what, but I have one of these. And this one wasn't big enough for the one that we ordered for the village. So I have one that's like 3 feet or something.
Wow.
Like that we're going to have at Red Team Village. But
that's
I had
amazing.
An extra one, and I knew we were going to be talking to you. So I figured it might find some use in some of the future tabletops. So I wanted to.
Well, I happen to have a normal size die in my bag. So I do have a gift for you.
Oh,
I will give you the regular size.
Beautiful.
One. Thank you so much. I appreciate this. This is awesome. really cool. Thank you so much, sir.
Yeah. So to kind of close things out here, why don't we tell us like where we can reach you? And I want to hear a little, if you want to plug your podcast and everything too, so that people
can
learn a lot more about what you do.
Sure, sure. All right. So how to reach me? So I'm so bad at this part. So company is Talus Security, right? Our website is talus.io. It's T-A-L-A-S. And it's actually an acronym, right? So like when we were naming the company, co-founder and I were like, all right, well, what do we want them to do? What do we want people to do? And we're like, oh, we want to take a look at security. So that's the name. Take a look at security, right? So you can reach me, paul.marco@talus.io. That's probably the best way to catch me. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn. Relatively easy to find there. I'm the bald guy. Well, I guess there's a lot of us in the industry. Depends on what you do, I suppose, right? And the podcast that I run is actually Cyber After Hours, right? So a little different, a little saltier language, right? So like, you know, I would not listen to this one at work. This is meant to be a on the commute home or pop in your earbuds or whatever you're gonna do. But you know, the key there is we basically pull random cybersecurity topics from a fishbowl every week. And we just try to emulate those conversations after work, right? You go out to a bar with your colleagues, or you're at a social event, or you're at a conference, right? And you're enjoying a beer or a cocktail, and you just kind of like decompress a little bit. Oh, let me tell you about this. Let me tell you about what happened this week. Well, what we do is, in order to try to replicate that non-scripted kind of human, kind of vulnerable element, we actually have no idea what we're going to talk about. So we literally pull a topic out of a fishbowl. We have like, you know, 50 or 60 of them written and like prepared in there. And when we pull the topic out, we're like, all right, well, we're going to talk about, you know, email security today. Or we're going to talk about like, you know, the difference between on-prem and cloud. Or we're going to talk about regulation. Or like, we're going to talk about the benefits of pen testing. Like, so we never really know. So it's very organic, much like our conversation today. I loved this format. I love just having a conversation. But that's it. So Cyber After Hours, I think what is our website? Now you can Google it. Cyber After Hours. Like, you'll find it. It's fine. I don't want to give the wrong site. Shows you how much I actually go to my own website. But yeah, that's really it. And I'd love for, you know, you to be on the show as well. I'd love to have you on. So we'll get that scheduled. Gladly. Awesome. Gladly.
Well, thank you, Paul. Appreciate you coming in, especially on short notice. Looking forward to syncing up again in a few weeks. This will be prior to when this actually drops. And one of the things I'm gonna point out that I think you do really well at, they have a competition or contest at DEF CON, and it's called Whose Slide Is It Anyway? And I think that would be like perfect based on what you just talked about with your podcast, is that somebody builds a slide deck and then the contestant gets up and you're just presenting on whatever topic comes up there related to security. I feel like
that would be amazing.
You might be like ready to go for something like that.
Here's the secret. I bullshit my way through most things in life. So I've gotten decently good at it. So I would definitely like to check that out. That'd be awesome.
All right, Paul. Thanks again. Appreciate
it. Cool, man. Thank you so much for having me on. Thank you, listeners. Take care. Be well.